Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rockin. Four North Coast police chiefs met with the public last month to talk about connecting with their communities and discuss what policing is like in Clatsop County. The event was sponsored by the Lower Columbia Diversity Project. The four police chiefs are Cannon Beach's Jason Skirmerhorn, Seaside's Dave Hamm, Warrenton's Matt Workman, and Astoria's Brad Johnson. Cannon Beach Chief Jason Skirmerhorn spoke first.
Originally, community policing was just being seen by the people and the taxpayers, you know, be seen doing your job. And now it's evolved more into being involved in the community, being involved in the decisions that are going on throughout the community and throughout the county. And small counties like this, you really have to rely on one another, and we certainly do. Every day of the week, and we rely on all of our other community partners, and I think that that's where the community policing comes together, is working with the other partners, whether it's the Department of Human Services or working with the Coast Guard for different things, as well as the fire departments and your chambers of commerce, your downtown business associations. Being involved in those meetings and finding out what's actually going on in the community, you learn a lot more than you learn sitting in your office or sitting in your patrol car where you're enclosed. Some things that we've started in Cannon Beach that they hadn't done before. Coffee with a cop was brought up by Officer Gregory. It's not something that's new, but it's something that's new for us. And Officer Gregory is my canine officer, and he said, why don't we do coffee with a cop? And so we tried that, and it worked well. We had, I think, three successful coffee with the cops last year, and this year we added a new twist to it with burger with a cop. And that actually brought three times the people. So we know food brings people. And it actually went very well. And it's an opportunity. It was interesting for me to get my officers to quit hanging in the corners with the other police officers, but get out and introduce yourself. And, you know, once they did that, it's really fun to see the interactions that go on. And now these citizens have a face to put to who they're talking to, and it's not just the uniform. You know, I'll have them come to the events like National Night Out and that type of thing in a polo shirt, you know, not in their uniform if they're not working, so they look a little bit more approachable. And that way they can find out that we're just the same as everybody else. We're no different. We're just doing our job. We did strategic planning a few years ago, and that we did a community forum to get that started to see what the citizens wanted from us. And that gives them a say on it, and that adds to the community partnerships where they feel like they're part of the police department instead of we're all going to do this and you guys can sit back and watch. And it's much more involved. People learn a lot from what they see on TV, unfortunately, and they think that that's how things are done and how we do our police work, but it's a lot more behind the scenes. And part of that is the Citizens Academy. In the South County, we've done one for the last 9 years with Seaside and Cannon Beach, Gearhart and the Sheriff's Office, working with the DAs, and the we've had lots of different citizens that have come through that, but then they've also become volunteers for the different agencies and for other departments as well, which is beneficial because then they know what really happens in law enforcement here. It's not like the TV show Cops. It's not like Reno 911. It's a real breathing beast that we're dealing with different things each day, and they get to see that by helping out and being involved. It's a great thing to send our kid or our officers to the schools to get to know the kids and let them learn, okay, these guys aren't so bad, because you'll see along the streets, parents are always telling the kids, oh, if you do something bad, he's going to arrest you. You know, they don't say, oh, if you do something good, he's going to give you a pencil. So that's something that we can start nurturing, that relationship with the students, and gain involved in Lunch Buddy. It's something that I've tried to get my officers to do. And I've done it for the last, 12 years now. Being involved with the students is fun because you're not just their lunch buddy as a police officer, you're that whole table's lunch buddy, because they want to talk to the guy in uniform. And so,
and the most popular person on the playground.
Exactly, yes, yes. Everybody wants to play kickball with you. So just those type of relationships, I think, are very valuable, not just for the kids, but for us as well, because you learn a perspective on what's going on. And something that I had learned, I had one lunch buddy all the way from second grade up into high school. And so it was neat watching that whole group of kids grow up. And when they had problems, they would call me and say, hey, this is what's going on. I'm not comfortable talking to anybody else. And so it's a great relationship to nurture. And it's something that we try to get everybody involved in, because those are the minds that are going to be helpful to you, and you can watch them grow. You know, the problem solving is part of the community policing as well. And so getting involved in different committees or different resources that we have locally, like Helping Hands with the homeless problem, you know, throughout the county. And same thing with domestic violence, and getting involved with the Harbor, because there's a big line of communication that needs to happen there between law enforcement and the advocates to make sure that we're all on the same page and that everything's being handled properly, because those resources are priceless to us. Especially for me in Cannon Beach, to have something like that in Seaside, a homeless shelter, where if we have somebody down there, we can take them up to the homeless shelter and give them a place to stay for the night. And that's so beneficial, as well as having the advocates for the domestic and sexual assaults, because those are so hairy to deal with, those situations where we're dealing with the suspect. And in Seaside, sometimes there's two officers on. Most of the time, there's two officers on. In Cannon Beach, we only have one officer on. So if we have an officer that's dealing with the suspect, how are we able to help that victim at the same time? So having things like the Harbor are very beneficial, because they can take the victim away and help that victim get her the resources, her or him, the resources that they need, while we're dealing with the other end of it. It just takes a huge load off of us to have those resources.
That was Police Chief Jason Skirmerhorn of Cannon Beach. Now here's Seaside Police Chief Dave Hamm.
If you're not familiar with Seaside, I want to kind of just take a real quick chance to introduce you to the size of our agency, which we're about 19 officers, or are 19 officers. We also have a community service officer. And we're also the South County Dispatch Center for the police and fire departments down there. So we have 8 employees that are manning our dispatch center down there. So at times this year right now, we're vacant of it, but we do keep an officer in the schools for a school resource officer position. There'd been a grant for a couple of years that we'd received and was helping fund that position part-time. And so in the last couple of years, it hadn't been a full time position, but we were in there quite a bit. You know, we are a little bit different maybe than Warrenton when it comes to different large events or what have you. They definitely have a different flavor for large events, fishing season and whatnot. And ours tends to be spring break, volleyball, Hood to Coast, and those kinds of things that bring in one our normal summer tourist types of population. But then the extreme, such as a 4th of July, where you have upwards of 50, 60, 70,000 people in a very concentrated area. And if it was anything like this year's 4th of July, we had a power outage right in the middle of that. So some of the things that Chief Skirmerhorn has already mentioned, we're involved with as well. One thing that, you know, we do have is a reserve officer program that's bringing just, you know, again, citizens that getting interested in wanting to be in law enforcement. It's a great way to introduce them. It's getting some public people to work in that position, volunteered, non-paid position, and riding along with us and doing those. We're oftentimes taking applications, so if you know anybody that's wanting to get into law enforcement or wanting to do something like that, send them our way. The Citizens Academy, we've been working for several years with the South County agencies to have a good program. When you talk about volunteers, we've gotten a couple of great volunteers out of that. I've got one lady that comes in and just starts filing our tickets and the department copies that. That is a huge time saver for some of our people, but directly related to coming to one of those types of meetings. And we've got another guy that comes in 2 or 3 times a week. In fact, I don't know why he hasn't asked for a paycheck yet, because that guy's there probably longer and more than maybe I am. But he's helping us do fingerprinting. We do fingerprinting for if you have a job, if you're going to go do lunch buddy, you got to have a background check. So we have a electronic fingerprint machine, and we provide that service for a small fee. But at the same time, that person helps us out immensely and keeps the officers out on the streets or keep them doing their jobs. And so it's awesome to have those citizens. The National Night Out has been a real great partnership with in Seaside. it works with Kiwanis Group and it works with Rotary, and then many other agencies sponsor or companies sponsor either financially, but financially with maybe product, whether it be sodas or what have you, and cut prices. But it's kind of a burger feed, just come out. There's really no agenda to it. It's come out, meet us, let's have a good time, get Parks and Rec involved, have kids games out there, and it's basically a time for everybody in that neighborhood to basically get out. We in the past have done two different parks in Seaside, one at Broadway Park, and then at Cartwright, you can go to either one that you want to, but the idea behind that is to kind of get your own neighborhoods out at least one night a week to say hello to your neighbors and have officers there, have the fire department there, have whoever else there to be able to talk about what's going on, what's concerns in your city or in your neighborhood. We started, actually, Jason started this before he left, was delivering food backpacks. We partner with a local church in Seaside that is getting food from all different places, and I'm not sure exactly the whole behind that, but they fill them. We go pick them up and deliver them up to the elementary school, and I think we got the best part of that whole thing because all the kids see the police officers showing up with these big bags of food, and it's for them to take home over the weekend to make sure that, you know, if they're needing food during the week and are on those you know, provided meals, maybe there's not much at home. And so that's got to be huge. I'm not necessarily hearing anything, you know, but I know that there's families that are, one, thankful for that. The kids, again, are associating that to the police department. So we are reaping major benefits out of that program that really most of the hard work or the hard work of it is really being done by a church. But again, when you're talking about programs that are partnering with other organizations, groups to make your whole community feel good about something happening, to me that's one of the better things that's out there that's really looking good and really a positive thing for us. So.
That was Chief Dave Hamm of Seaside. Next was Warrenton Police Chief Matt Workman.
I guess I'm next up on the coast. So Jason started off by saying that community policing is not new and that it's been going on forever since there's been the cops. And essentially that's true. I always, when I've done talks and stuff about community policing, I always use Andy Griffith as the ultimate community policing type person, just that they know their community, everybody knows them, they get out, they handle things appropriately when they need to, but they do alternative stuff when they, you know, need to. Now, we don't have a jail that has a drunk that we take in, has the keys and comes in like Otis all the time.
Thank goodness you give your officers more than one bullet.
Exactly, more than one bullet. But again, it's nothing new, but the four of us sitting up here all have the luxury of having a department that has a good relationship with their communities, respectively or together. And that's not the case everywhere. There's a lot of departments that, especially you get into larger departments where people don't know their police officers. They don't know their police departments. They don't know what they do and the things that they offer their community. And some police departments, you have to admit, don't get out and do things in their community. And they do the law enforcement, keeping the peace part of our jobs, but they don't go further than that. And I think we all buy into that we need to go further than that, and we need to do things, and we need to be involved, and we have officers that are willing to do that. Not all officers are, you would say, good community policing officers, because we're all different, yet we need to have somebody that's willing to go out there. Jason mentioned that, you know, you have these officers in the corner waiting and stuff. I know my officers will go out and they can take control of a situation. They'll go up and talk to people. They'll walk around. And yet you put them in something like this where everybody's looking at them and it's like they're a different person. They've never been in public before.
Like a middle school dance.
Exactly. And yet they can go into any other situation and control it and take care of the situation. We go into the school every April and talk about alcohol awareness with the fifth graders. We have a presentation for that. And we also go in and do fingerprinting. And we not just taking people's fingerprints like Dave was discussing, but also we show kids how we get prints, latent prints, you know, kind of the CSI stuff. They love that, spreading dust around. I bet their parents hate it because they come home just covered in fingerprint dust. And that's one of those things. that happens. We do internet safety, child safety, ID, theft presentations for all ages, especially with the advent of the computer and internet and all the ways you can be defrauded. The phone things are coming back now where people are calling and saying, we need you to verify your information, or I'm sorry, I'm your grandson and he's in jail, and if you want to get him out, you have to do that. We had a guy taken for over $1,200 in Warrenton about a year and a half ago that he went to Fred Meyer and got cash cards and sent them the numbers for the cards off to somebody, and it's a crime that can rarely, if ever, be solved. And so how do we prevent that as education? And so we need to do a better job of that. We have a parent aid program through the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police that if a parent believes their child is on drugs or under the influence of something, they can come down to the police department and do a voluntary urine test. And it takes about 5-10 minutes. We get a reading right there. It's not used for any criminal purposes. It's totally confidential. I don't use that data. All I do is I record male, female, age, and that's it. We don't use anything with it. It's for the parents to know if their child was under the influence of some type of drug. And that's through our Oregon Association Chiefs of Police is the one that sponsors that, and it's called Parent Aid. Sometimes police community relations are built off of problems. And we had a drug house that was causing a neighborhood lots and lots of problems. And we were doing little things, but we weren't getting it taken care of. And finally, they came to a city commission meeting and said, we need to do something. It's causing problems. There's all kinds of crime and stuff. So I met with all of them after the city commission meeting and said, you guys need to come talk to me. Gave several of them my cell phone, my work cell phone. And I would get texts all the time. There's a deal going down, and I'd let my officers know. You know, sometimes I was just falling asleep 11:30 at night and my text is going, Chief, there's something going on, you know. And I felt that it was my responsibility to step up and try to help with that in any way we could. So I worked with our building and planning department to get the house condemned. We worked with the FBI because when they did the drug raid on it, they found some explosive devices and stuff like that. But again, that's something that we wouldn't have known unless those neighbors wouldn't have got fed up and came in and said, we need to do something, we want to work with you, and we want to make this better.
That was Chief Matt Workman of Warrenton. He was followed by Astoria Police Chief Brad Johnson.
When we first started practicing community policing in Astoria, we did it as a program, and we were nationally renowned for it. We are part of the cops training video with Tim Gillum walking down Commercial Street in his polo shirt. But it was a program and not a philosophy. And it was based on neighborhoods. And we were forcing something that was unnatural. That's not what we're doing now. Instead of it being a program, we have a philosophy of being connected to our community. And that is what is different about all of our agencies from Baltimore, Ferguson, Chicago, those areas that have programs but don't have connection with their communities. And I think that's really where we have a special place here on the North Coast, because we do have those decades long, in some case, connections with our community. And it's the partnerships that make that officer able to be successful. Because he needs to be able to refer things to Clatsop Behavioral Health Care, to Women at the Harbor, and those other social agencies that can actually provide a service to help solve problems long term. Because really we are, despite our philosophies of problem-oriented policing and all these other great terms that we have that we toss around, we're band-aids. When the police show up, there's a long-term problem a lot of times that we're just putting a band-aid on. And if we want to solve it, we've got to pull the levers in our community that are for those partners that actually have the ability to intervene. And I think that's the real difference on the North Coast with community policing is that partnership belief. I mean, I remember back when the harbor was starting to start, and We'd affectionately call him the Man Haters Club. And that was the attitude at the time. There was that standoffishness between law enforcement and this important community partner. And over time, they broke down our barriers, we broke down their barriers, and we started to see that we had this very important mission in common, and that neither of us were able to do our job without the other. And it improved their business, and it improved our business, and it improved our community. And I think that's one of those things, that's a great example of how those partnerships develop and how they work over time. And then I guess the other thing I'd say is there's no cookie cutter answer to that. That's the other thing you're hearing here. You're hearing we all have some of the same things that we're doing to try to interact with our communities. But what I love the definition of community policing from the cops office, because they want a very particular thing done in your community. And it's very difficult to satisfy those grant requirements sometimes. We've done it for years. And we've done policing by grant, if you would. I was hired a couple decades ago because we had a DUI grant. And so our focus was on DUI enforcement. And then we got a community policing grant. And so our focus was on community policing. Then we got a school resource officer. And our focus was on school resource officer. And then we went back to community policing. And then we went back to school resource officer. And it's funny how you watch us chase those grants and change our philosophy slightly as a result. But it's been important to us. The school resource officer is one of those great levers in the community. We miss that dearly. And the reason we miss it is because you have this fairly large population that's fairly homogeneous. They're all about the same age. They all have very similar likes. It's a unique community within our community. And they have special needs. And if you can reach those folks with the right officer, because not every officer is right to be cited in a police or in a school, it's a great place to both gain information and change the behaviors of kids long term, and to make sure information's flowing. Yeah, you may think of our jobs as crime fighters, but what do you think? 20% of our time is crime fighting?
Maybe.
I think if it's a good day, we're doing 20% of that, and the rest of it is problem solving for people.
The four North Coast police chiefs talked about the problem solving they're faced with on a daily basis, particularly with mental health issues.
The folks with Asperger's syndrome, the folks with autism, the folks with mental health issues. We're getting a broad base of different experiences with our communities, but it's not the culture that we're focusing on, it's these individual little silos that are primary drivers in our contacts with the public that have been a significant issue for us.
Within the last year, maybe year and a half, we have had a philosophical change in dealing with mentally ill people, whereas before it was take them to jail immediately, and now we go through a different thought process. Some of that was forced to do that with high-profile incidents that have been going on. Other, it was just the light coming on that there's a better way or this isn't the way to deal with them.
And I think one of the most frustrating things for us with the mentally ill right now are those folks that we do have to take into custody on peace officer holds or director's holds, which is to get that acute mental health care. There's no beds.
No beds.
And it doesn't matter how good our local treatment is, if there's no beds, those people are being warehoused in your hospital room, the ERs, and receiving their meds there, but no other real treatment. And that is the crisis. Those folks need to go someplace that is safe for them to get better, so that they can be returned to their communities.
In answer to a question from the audience, the discussion turned to drugs.
Meth and heroin are the two most dangerous drugs. And I regularly check in with the Drug Task Force to see what they're seeing, because they know a lot more about the drug pulse, if you will, than I do. And it kind of fluctuates back and forth where right now I think there's more heroin out there. Plus, We have heroin ODs all the time, and so...
I think that, you know, the whole picture, if you're sitting here looking at somebody who has an addiction to the methamphetamine, heroin, whatever the substance is, in a lot of those cases, it starts with the property crimes and all that kind of stuff, so families, you, the victim, are being affected by that. When you talk about the addiction and bringing it home, it may be as little as neglect. And I don't mean that to make light of it as much as it may just be a neglect situation, but it may be more of an abuse situation. So when you have a family where somebody's out of control with their addiction and unable to, one, provide minimum basic needs, and we go into these homes and you know that's what the situation is, I think it has a long-reaching effect. It might be children are taken out of the home. Are they placed in foster care? Is that foster care going to be a grandparent? Is it going to be an aunt, or is it going to be family, or is it going to be complete uptake out of the family and put into somebody they don't even know? And so when you're talking about the drug problem, the reaching far reaches of just, again, how is it affecting your community, your livability, your ladders that are getting stolen, your utility trailer that's getting stolen. And I throw those two things out because we just had a case of this going on and we arrested the person, and it's a drug situation where they're feeding their habits.
What I see in Warrenton is less of the neglect and abuse situation is absent parents. I see a lot of grandparents raising a lot of kids in Warrenton because their parents are off. The drug means more to them than their children. And they'll steal from their families. It means more to them than their children. And, the saddest case of a heroin overdose I've heard recently is one of Brad's, where a young lady died and was
7 months
pregnant. And the baby died too, so...
Most of the little crimes that you see, or most of the crimes that you read about in the paper, are related to drugs or people doing these crimes, the break-ins and other things like that, the thefts, because they're trying to feed their habit. And unfortunately, there is a lot of the effect of the family, and we don't have the resources locally here, you know, to work with that. We have DHS, Department of Human Services, that will assist with that type of thing. But, you know, we have programs with the court where we have a drug court for addicts to go through and meet certain standards to make it through the drug court, and also with Helping Hands and Seaside having those resources to work with families down there, getting the people clean and also helping and providing shelter for their families. But it's certainly something that is devastating for our county, and something Dave and I both worked on the drug task force, and that's something that, you know, we try to provide them resources where we can, but with our departments, you know, we're so strapped on just trying to fill a patrol position that to have an extra officer that can get into schools and another officer that can help out with the drug task force, where that's what they focus on, and that can be very helpful because that takes a lot of concentration for an officer then to split their time and be able to work on that. And so, unfortunately, in the middle schools, kids are taking pills, that type of thing, because it's something that they think is less dangerous than heroin or methamphetamine, but the pills they're getting addicted to, and it's harder for people to know what they're under the influence of.
And that is really a gateway to that heroin. When you start getting on the Oxy, and you get addicted to Oxy, and then you can't afford your Oxy anymore, and then... heroin's much less expensive, and if you've ever smelled tar heroin, I can't imagine putting that in my body, but apparently it becomes appetizing at some point, and then addicting.
You've been listening to The Human Beat with Police Chiefs Jason Skirmahorn of Cannon Beach, Dave Hamm of Seaside, Matt Workman of Warrenton, and Brad Johnson of Astoria. This is Coast Community Radio. I'm Roger Rocca.